today's episode, talk about Ross's trip to Alabama, Coach Prime making waves, the Super League doesn't stand a chance, and guacamole problems in Michigan.
Time now for the College Football Inquirer with Dan Wetzel.
Saban's office had many leather-bound books that smelled of rich mahogany, like Anchorman, I think.
Russ Dellinger.
Now, this guy's sentence, I think, should be no more guacamole for life.
And SI's Pat Forty.
Not just into it, but like squabbling with random Kentucky fans.
Here's Pat, Russ, and Dan.
All right, welcome to the pod, and Ross is coming. Yeah, part-timer. Part-time. I don't know what's going on. I'm at the Masters in Augusta, Georgia, and Ross is supposed to meet me here at this house we have. Pat, what he typed in Augusta, Maine into his GPS? Is that
rental car return? It booked like a one-way rental and booked it to return to Augusta, Maine. Slightly off on the eastern seaboard. So he's got that. He's tweeting pictures of like being in Augusta, but he is not yet on the pod, which tells me he's slacking right now.
This is what I deal with, people. This is what I deal with. Yeah, sometimes I'm a little grieved, aggravated, short-tempered. This is why. Augusta, Georgia, Augusta, Maine. I mean, you're on the pod, you're not on the pod. We don't know.
Yeah.
Nobody knows.
Tweeting pictures from the airport or something, rental car return. I don't know.
If he's at the rental car return's like 30 minutes from here. He's not making it. Well, where is he?
I don't know.
He thinks is he getting a cab or something?
I don't know. I'm going to respond to his tweet and tell him we're podcasting now.
Tell him this is terrible. This show is already off to a bad start. I blame Ross. It's not my fault. And Pat, you showed up, so can't blame you. And we got Joe.
I'm here.
Joe's our new producer. He's here. Everyone's here except Ross. Ross is wandering around Augusta looking for Tiger Woods or something. It's like Phil Mickelson looking for the Krispy Kreme. We're over here, Ross. Ross on the list. He's on the list.
He's out at the Hooters with John Daly.
He's down at the Hooters drinking beer with John Daly. I don't know where he is. T-Bones. Is at the airport is nowhere near this house. I'm in Martinez. Mm. Anyway, whatever. Couple quick shout outs. Might as well. This podcast is not even starting the right way. Shout out to Dennis Cooper. He's a big LSU fan down in Louisiana. He was complaining we weren't doing enough pods and he was bored.
Mm.
Appreciate it. Thanks for that.
Yeah.
Sam Mosolino at Sammy Moss, a nice listener who said he'd buy me a beer at the Masters today.
Really?
I did not meet up with him because it's hard to meet people at the Masters, like 40,000 people here. Also had to work. Unlike Ross, I take this seriously. You should have. That maybe he's with Sam. Maybe Sam and Ross are bellied up to a bar somewhere.
Maybe.
Anyway, appreciate the offer. See, there's some quality people out there, and then there's other people. Let's leave it at that. Speaking of people that people are looking for, Scott Drew kind of has emerged as the leading candidate in Kentucky. Yeah. Who knows? This could be dated. It led to a quite humorous bit where Chip Gaines of HGTV fame, and he and his wife have this big operation down in Waco. It's basically the entire Waco economy is Baylor basketball and the Chip Gaines and Joanna Gaines people.
And Dr. Pepper.
Dr. Pepper, and then that one Alico building. It was like one building, one tall building.
Yeah.
But this guy, Chip Gaines, always seems like a pretty good dude on the thing. He's getting into it with Kentucky fans about whether they're going to be able to steal away Scott Drew, including fighting with Barstool Kentucky. He battled with a guy named Zane Zane, he said, you don't want to go band for band with us, Chip. And he put out a bunch of money. This is a Kentucky fan. Chip Gaines said, money is boring. Everyone's got money. Not true. We've got God on our side.
Oh, boy.
Oh, it's a holy war for Scott Drew. Pat, what's happening? The chosen
one. I want to know if Zane is actually the guy with the money. Is Zane putting up any money, or is he just talking about other people's money? I think I probably know the answer to that. It's fascinating. I think Scott Drew certainly has the opportunity to be Kentucky's next coach if he wants to be Kentucky's next coach. Some Baylor fans got excited. Kentucky fans and Baylor fans got excited different directions when a plane that belongs to Joe Kraft, the number one Kentucky basketball booster, Cole Barron, went from Lexington to Waco this morning and then back to Lexington, actually to Georgetown, Kentucky, a little bit north, and landed. And Scott Drew wasn't on the plane. And then Scott Drew tweeted a picture of himself in Waco eating lunch with a dude from like a bank, probably a booster. And noted that he is in Waco, which is crafty work by Scott Drew. It does not say, I'm staying at Baylor. It doesn't say, I don't want the Kentucky job. It just is throwing up a little misdirection play, I think, here to keep people guessing. But this, for now, looks like Scott Drew's job to accept or turn down. And probably today is Wednesday, probably by sometime Thursday, we will have an answer on that. We'll see. But he is the target right now for the Kentucky job.
Well, we'll see. The mere fact that we are we got Chip Gaines and HGTV into this is enough for me. It's already been exciting.
And not just into it, but like squabbling with random Kentucky fans.
Bringing God on their side.
Yeah. There's a
Scott Drew God does
is part
like
of
God.
The equation with Scott Drew, as does Mitch Barnhart, the Kentucky athletic director. There's a lot of religion involved here.
Yeah, there is. All right, well, we'll see who wins. We'll find out who God really favors soon enough. I wanted to get to this story, which we did not get to, which was interesting, even if it's unlikely to occur, which is our favorite kind of stories, which was the proposal last week that came out in The Athletic. Andrew Marchand and Stuart Mandel had a story on the Super League. A variety of factions, most notably not involving the SEC, Big Ten, ESPN, or Fox, but a bunch of other people, are proposing an 80-team league, Super League, basically a new Division One, with eight different 10-person conferences. It would basically be, the 70 would be all of the former members of the Power Five leagues, plus Notre Dame and SMU. SMU jumped up. So Washington State and Oregon State would be back. We'd actually kind of recreate both the Big East and the Pac-12. It's like a zombie college football. And then there'd be this one final 10-team league where you could be relegated or not. So all the other scraps out there get to fight to get into this League 8, whatever this thing is. And they'd be able to control the postseason, control TV, all the different stuff. West Virginia's president, Gordon Gee, always fun. We're in an existential crisis, he said. Syracuse chancellor said the current model for governing and managing athletics is dead. Not going to deny that. I don't know if any of this would go, but this was very English Premier League-ish with the it's kind of a combo with some protected spots, but then some relegation, which would kind of be fun, I guess. Obviously, it would consolidate things, but it would consolidate under a big tent that perhaps the real power players of this may not appeal to. I didn't see, like, you know, comments from the Ohio State president or the Texas president or anything like that, chancellor, whatever they are. What do you think of the Super League, Pat?
Nor were there comments like from Greg Sankey, right?
No.
So there's some very important people that have yet to have been heard from. It's intriguing. I think, you know, I haven't talked to anybody who thinks that we aren't headed towards a substantially different structure. What exactly it looks like, I don't know. Is there actual real relegation? And even this, as you said, is kind of a hybrid relegation where some teams can't be relegated and some teams can be, you know, can and can't be promoted. So is it really like that? You know, the more people think and talk about ways to break the model and reformulate it, the closer we get to it actually happening. So I would take it seriously. The involvement of private equity is kind of looming out there, and that might be careful what you wish for. Private equity, when it gets involved, they want things their way, and their way may not jive with what college athletics has always been about. Maybe it shouldn't, but if you invite in somebody else's money, that money tends to rule the roost. Ask newspapers how it went bringing private equity on board. That was a good time. There's still way too much that we don't know. I did talk to, you know, a very good source in all this stuff yesterday, said he thinks, you know, I was saying four or five years, how long will it take for substantial major changes? And he said more like 18 to 24 months. So if that happens, we're looking at a much faster timeline here, and which would indicate, too, that, you know, like the chances of the ACC holding together seem perhaps a little bit slim. There'd be a lot of things that would have to happen in a hurry, but I think we're being told to be on guard for that to be the case.
Update, I think Ross entered our house here. See how long it takes him to set up.
Okay.
Wow. Cliffhanger okay. For all you listeners.
Yeah, 17 minutes after we turned on the equipment. Yeah.
I mean, hey, no big deal.
Who's counting?
3 o'clock is what it said, but it's 3:17 right now. Anyway, we'll see how long it takes him to get set up here. But I do. Somebody's over there. Might be a burglar. I don't know. At my house. Take whatever you want. Just renting. Yeah, look.
What if it's the chairman of Augusta?
Fred Ridley? Is it Fred Ridley? Maybe it's...
Yeah, it's him.
Yeah. We don't know who's going by. John Rahm hitting bombs. So, yeah, no Fox and no ESPN. I've heard they aren't interested in this at this point. I don't know. I mean, I like proposals. I like people throwing ideas out there. Something's going to have to give. They're going to have to do something to contain costs. The transfer situation. As much as I don't like guardrails, I've always been opposed to the unlimited transferring, but they kind of shot themselves in the foot with that. But it'd certainly be better for popularity of the game to have some continuity. I think you see that in like part of women's basketball's appeal is they don't, at least they weren't. Now they might start, but people staying 4 years and stuff like that, where you can build on it. Something's got to give, and they're going to, you know, I agree. These next 2 years are going to be as tumultuous as the last two have been. This is going to be even more, and it's kind of terrifying stuff. It's nothing that any, you know, I wish we could just take a beat and figure it out, but. So this was a concept. I don't really know exactly what this does. Does it just make more good games? Is that really the appeal? Like, will you still be able to play the bottom 50 teams? Like, what is the point of this?
Yeah, it's so short on detail that it's really kind of hard to even know what they're aiming at, you know, and at least how it would work. You can figure out a little bit what they're aiming at, but what's the actual process by which it works?
Yeah, I still think you know, a lot of teams need to play you need the MAC to pad your record, you know?
Yep.
And sell seats and stuff like that. You can't just have a pro model and teams are going 1-11. I don't think. It's not when you're trying to fill 110,000 seat stadiums or 80,000 seat stadiums. NFL struggles when teams are down, they struggle to get interest and sell tickets, and they have a way out, and those stadiums are smaller and they're in bigger cities and all that. So, I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah.
But it was off season.
Yeah. If you're taking, you know, Mississippi State and Indiana and, Virginia and people like that, and taking them from 6-6 and getting into a bowl game and reducing them to 3-9, That extinguishes a lot of enthusiasm from the fans and a lot of their incentive to keep going. People don't really love those games, but they love to see their team win. And they come out of the stadium happy after they win and talk about, hey, well, we're our third string running back who got to play against Kent State. He's pretty good. You know, you take that away, and I think it would hurt the fan engagement with the team.
Absolutely. People are accustomed to having winning. And again, there's no way out. You don't get the number one pick. So when we talked about a draft, right? A national draft or something like that's so far away from anything happening. But if you're not, you know, the NFL, we'll talk a lot of draft the rest of this month. Hey, look who showed up for work. It's Ross.
How you doing? Good to be here. Yeah. I trust that you guys shared my quote hashtag travel Ross story with the rest of the world, which is I was supposed to drop my car off in Augusta, Maine. I accidentally booked it for Augusta, Maine drop-off location and not Augusta, Georgia. But I didn't want to drive the 18 hours to Augusta, Maine. So Hertz was nice enough to let me drop it off at the airport in Augusta. Might be a small fee. We'll see.
It was a riveting 20 minutes, believe me.
I'm sure. What did I miss?
Actually, the Super League. What do you think of it? Go ahead. Jump in.
Oh, no. Oh, no.
It's not likely to happen, but any thoughts?
Yeah, definitely not happening. Yeah, I don't think it was ever going to happen anytime soon because the SEC, Big Ten, and the TV networks, you know, weren't on board. But as soon as they signed the CFP deal, a month ago or so, it was completely dead, I think. Now, that's not to say that, right, in the long term, it may pop back up, right? A CFP deal ends in 2031. There's a lot of TV contracts that come up around 2030, 2031. So I think it'll be a concept out there that that would be floating out there. I kind of heard about it seriously in early February, and I think it was a pressure point or a motivating factor during the CFP discussions. But I don't know that the SEC or the Big Ten ever had collectively had that much interest in doing it. And you need those two entities, and you need the TV networks. You need the TV networks to potentially blow up all their deals. You need the conferences to blow up all their deals. It's really complex. I really think right now, at least in the next, you know, 4, 6, 8 years, it's a non-starter.
Oh, that was fun.
Why were people still talking and writing about it like last week?
Yeah, I couldn't understand that myself. But I'm kind of, you know, I'm glad that, you
content,
know.
Content, Pat.
Yeah, that is true, right? Content. Yeah. People love to. I think The Athletic got about 3 or 4 store posts out of it. When, you know, I think the Puck, John Oren, who's now with I believe it's called the Puck, and he wrote about it a few weeks ago. ESPN wrote about it a month or two ago, a little bit. But The Athletic did have some, you know, some details and some on the record quotes. And I am kind of glad they kind of put it out there, but it is just kind of fodder, you know. I just think it's not serious right now. And like I said, I was kind of building a story around it if the CFP were to get further delayed. But as soon as the CFP was signed, the CFP deal was signed, that was kind of it. But that's not to say it's, you know, going to be dead forever. I think there are some interesting concepts in there. I think a lot of people in college sports do feel like something of that nature, football being broken away in some way, is part of what could be a solution.
You were at Alabama, Ross?
I took a little tour de SEC on the way to Augusta, Maine. Visited some SEC campuses nearby, so stopped in at Alabama. It was one of them, and saw the new coach and kind of witnessed all the changes there in Tuscaloosa within the building. It was quite interesting. Last time I was in that building, met with Nick Saban in his office. I walked into Kalen DeBoer's office, and if anybody has seen pictures of Nick Saban's old office or been in there, there's memorabilia covering one wall to the other. It's wild: game footballs, hats, pictures, and then he's got a coffee table in the the sitting area of his office with rings, championship rings, just piled on top of each other. It's kind of his like little, or was his little recruiting area. So I'm used to that, used to seeing that. And I walked into Kalen's office and there's almost nothing in it. It's completely bare bones. And part of that is obviously Nick Saban moved everything out. And another, but a part of that also is they're about to start, I think next week, a full renovation of the office. Nick Saban's office is like a blast from the past. It's got wooden floors, wooden walls, wooden, even a partly, I think, a wooden ceiling. So it's kind of like something from yesteryear. So it'll be renovated, and it'll look like a lot of the modern type of things that we see today with the glass, a lot of the glass and the different lights and all that stuff. So there's nothing in the office, which is first thing that strikes you, right? And we sat around, Kalen and I, around the coffee table that usually was piled high with championship rings, and there's nothing on it. In fact, it's a different coffee table. So that just tells you like how much is changing there. And I think within the facility,
well, let's go to the changes. Let's just do this. This is good stuff here. Hold on. We love we just already talked about HGTV. So we like did. It. Chip renovation. Games, yeah. So Saban's office had many leather-bound books and smelled of rich mahogany, like Anchorman, I think. Is that what you're saying? And Kalen's got the minimalist. Is he going to put a bar in? Like, how big of a change could we get?
Well, like, I mean, it's a significant change. They are like tearing out two walls. Yeah. And they're expanding the office. They're putting a big, like the exterior, the front of the office will be like all glass. You know, right now it's just wall. It'll be different floors in there. Right now they're wooden. The dressers right now are wooden in there. It does look like you kind of step back into the 1980s into that office. So it'll look completely different. He'll have a huge, Kalen's new office will have a huge like TV wall, you know, like the ones you see now. There'll be a lot of glass and things like that. So it's just kind of a little bit of an example, I think, of the full scale changes coming there. I mean, just inside the facility, the vibe, right, is
Grandpa's
is
gone.
Much,
yeah,
much different. Yeah, well, somebody gone. Told me, somebody did refer say that you know, there was some laughter coming from, you know, one of the coaches' meetings, gasp laughter, right? And I'm like, wow, that's just different. You know, people are a little looser, they're a little calmer, they seem to be a little less maybe on edge, right? And there was just a little laughing in the hallway, and one person mentioned the old man's gone. So
oh boy.
So it's a different vibe, and Kalen talked about that. It's his vibe, you know. He's really laid back and he's relaxed. And it doesn't mean he's not demanding, right? It doesn't mean he can't get intense. I think he can, but it is just it's very different from the just the environment, the atmosphere around there than when Nick Saban presided. You know, they're having music at practice. They never really had music at practice, right? The assistant coaches are doing regular media interviews, which is pretty pretty unusual, as well under Nick Saban. So lots of change, and it was a good sit down with Kalen. You know, if you got 15 minutes with Nick Saban, you were doing really well. And Kalen DeBoer is a talker, and we went about an hour in his office, and we'll have the story up on Yahoo Sports Thursday morning, I believe. But it basically is centers on all these changes, whether they're cosmetic, like I mentioned about the office, or just the environment in the building. And maybe, you know, it's not necessarily good, right? And Greg Byrne said this, the AD at Alabama, it's not necessarily good. It's not necessarily bad. He knew that there would be changes, and he knew that when he hired any head coach, there are going to be changes. There are going to be differences. And, you know, that's on display there.
I mean, there is no vibe like Nick Saban's vibe. Maybe Kirby Smart approximates it, but it was always going to be different, especially when you hire somebody from outside of his tree. It's just such a, I mean, when you're replacing somebody who isn't just the best at what they do, but has this kind of forceful personality and aura, Well, that's when the changes kind of come out more jarring. I'll never forget when Mike Davis took over for Bob Knight. I mean, that was truly like the Soviet wall coming down for a lot of the staffers in at Indiana, where it was just like the mood changed so quickly, so dramatically. Mike Davis didn't end up winning like Bob Knight, though. And so, hey, lighter, funner. Well, that gets you somewhere, but it doesn't necessarily get you championship rings. So we'll see if DeBoer can repopulate that coffee table.
No ass chewings going on the assistant coaches, apparently, right? They're free and clear for the time being. I don't know. DeBoer runs a heck of a show. Pat, what would you put in your office if you could redesign? You know, if they gave you $4 million to redo your office, if you even have an office.
Oh, boy.
I would have an extensive whiskey and bourbon section in my office.
Mahogany bar.
I would have have the leather brown books.
It would hurt your productivity if you had the whiskey and bourbon.
Would it? Much of my journalism career has been getting close to someone who drinks and they're just drinking a lot with them. That has served my career. So
that's true. But you have to get them to come to your office then.
I would have an Alabama football office.
I would have a fridge with a Sierra Nevada keg in it. That's for sure. Let's start there. That and
I mean, it'd be awesome if they were just like, "What kind of office would you like?" Like, oh, cigar. I'd want a cigar porch.
Speaking of cigars, there were a few things, like I said, in Kalen's office because. Again, number one, he just hadn't moved a lot from Washington. Number one and number two, he knows that everything's about to be tore up and renovated. So, but there were a couple things in there. One, there was a birdhouse, a wooden birdhouse a birdhouse.
War eagle, and, like war eagle.
War eagle birdhouse. It was a birdhouse that some like fan had made him and like. Sent it up there. And so that was in his office. There were a couple
Big
of
mistake. Don't encourage them, Kalen. Do not encourage these people to start sending you homemade goods.
And speaking of cigars, there was a box of cigars that a company sent him, asked him if he was a cigar smoker. He said, when the moment is right. I assume that's after a big victory, maybe. But that's about it, Dan. There were about three binders that he had taken from Washington of his spring football plan. And there were two walking sticks in a corner, and I actually asked him about them, and he had no idea where they come from or what they were. So he's just, you know, he's still getting into the feel of things there. But it was a good conversation with him. We talked about kind of the elephant in the room, so to speak, no pun intended, at Alabama, but is replacing a legend, you know, and I thought he had some typical comments, but he was pretty blunt about realizing that many people around the industry think that that job is kind of has unrealistic expectations, that he's in kind of a no-win situation, as folks might say in the industry. And he said, yeah, I get it, you know, but he said, I think if anyone is going to put more pressure on me, it's myself. And he said he understands there are going to be a lot more eyeballs and a lot more critiquing of him. He got that very quickly. He learned the passion of Alabama football when he landed. Thousands of people were there at the airport. And then this past weekend, they had a spring scrimmage. They invited the donors and booster clubs. I think he expected maybe 100 people or so. And there were like hundreds of people that came out. And not only that, they lingered around, went in the team room, and then wanted him to give a speech, wanted him to talk to them. And he was like, what is happening? You know, what is this? And one of the quotes he gave me was, everyone hangs on every word you say here. So he's very quickly realized the passion of football in that place.
I still the birdhouse is fascinating me there. There'd be a story to do on all the weird stuff people send to their coaches, you know, like the fan stuff. I remember distinctly having lunch with Mack Brown once at Texas, and a fan came up to him and gave him a small crucifix that he had hand carved out of antelope horn. and wanted Mac to have it. And Mac was like, thank you. And Mac handled it with his usual charm and everything. But after the guy left, the Luke was like, that's nice, but what do I do with it?
Sally and I were just talking about that. Looking for an antelope. You know what? Let's break, and then we'll talk more Alabama. We'll be back after this. All right, Ross, what do you think? So Kalen DeBoer's most famous play call last year was the 4th-and-1 from his own 29 in the Apple Cup when they went for it. Didn't just go for it. They ran like this triple option type, triple option in the classic, but a triple decision, and it ended up being like a pitch back to a Dunze, and incredibly gutsy call. They called it the Riverboat Gambler, even though I think Riverboat Gamblers are basically 80-year-old women chain smoking playing slot machines. So I don't really think that's a.
I have a few Riverboat Gamblers in my family.
Yeah, we.
It's not the old school Riverboat Gambler. It's just somebody on a floating casino.
We need
casino.
To update our verbiage.
Yeah.
Yeah, we need to update our verbiage.
Those casinos suck. Yeah, it's not like this. It's just an old lady that in tunica hitting a slot machine. That's not it. I don't think that's what we're going for. Anyway, if he tries that at Alabama, and this is how he coaches, but they're so used to, like you said, the attention and the pressure and the whole, how does that go over? But like it's they don't all work. They don't all work, but you have to go with it. It's like Dan Campbell coaches the Detroit Lions in a very different way of coaching, and people get really uncomfortable with it. And they couldn't believe like he was going for it in the NFC. Like, this is how he does it. You either have to be all in or not. But it's jarring when those guys come and try to upset the apple cart. And Kalen DeBoer is going to coach it not just a different way from most schools, but particularly a different way for Alabama coming off of Nick Saban. And that's what's going to be, to me, is very interesting in how that – because they can't all work.
Well, that's the thing you might – watch for, especially early on next season, is does Kalen DeBoer change how he calls plays? Does he change how he approaches the game because of where he's at? You know, he didn't do that at Washington. A lot of people maybe thought he would, from Fresno to Washington, or from NAIA ball at Sioux Falls to Fresno. He really hasn't changed how he's called games and how he approaches coaching, and he hasn't changed off the field either, right? All the things I'm talking about, how he's different from Nick Saban, and how his facility is different, and the environment is different. You know, one of the things Kalen told me is he learned early on from his college coach at Sioux Falls, Bob Young, to be yourself, because Bob's first season of coaching, Kalen said Bob tried to be Vince Lombardi. Like, that's who he was going to be. He was going to lay down the law. And he said it didn't go well. And he witnessed that. And he said he'll always remember that, to be yourself, whether that's off the field personality wise in the building, like I saw, or calling plays on the sideline and running an offense. You got to wonder if he'll stick to that and be himself. You got to wonder if in Tiger Stadium on 4th-and-2 at the 40, if he'll do it. And it should be fascinating to see.
Yeah, that, I mean, he's got to be him and get the full backing of the administration that he was hired to do things his way, I think. One of the things, Saban was old school and he coached that way. They just, speaking of those fourth downs, Dan, guess who had the fewest attempts on fourth down in the country last year?
Alabama.
They went for 7 on 14 games. Washington wasn't exactly like wheeling and dealing on fourth down. They went for it 22 times in 15 games, but that's triple the amount that Saban did. That's just one example, but play calling in general, I think,
you
DeBoer
have the rankings there?
Generally.
Like, who came in first? Do you have
Baylor,
the rankings?
48. Yes, Baylor 48 times. South Florida, Golish, 46. Temple, Buffalo, Western Michigan. Mississippi was down the list. The year before, Mississippi went for it like 4,000 times, or maybe it was before, whenever Kiffin first got there. Yeah, 2021, they led the nation in fourth down go. Then they did it less as things went on. Probably was their team got better and they didn't have to gamble as much. So, you know, but Saban was out. Saban did things in a fairly conventional manner, and Kalen DeBoer probably didn't get to where he is by doing things in that conventional manner, because look at his path of where he had to go to get to Alabama. But, you know, there is no doubt that mistakes will be magnified times a million at Alabama as opposed to what they were at Washington or Fresno or Sioux Falls. So it's got to be prepared for that.
Pretty interesting. See what this goes. All right. The other thing about, go ahead, Ross. I heard he was not concerned about talent. He said the transfer portal defections were, I think he called it overblown or something. Like, they kept most of the guys they wanted. Is that, did you get that sense?
Yeah, I got that kind of that gist from him. He doesn't seem, we didn't talk about too much like personnel-wise or on the field, but I did ask him about, you know, the talent. This is probably, not probably, right? This is going to be his most talented group of players that he's ever had in his career. I thought one of the most interesting parts of my interview with him was about what he's noticed the first 3 months in the players and how they work, their work ethic and their focus. It's almost like he couldn't believe, right, how intense and focused they were, how on the field, how attacking and physical they were, and then off the field, how focused and deliberate they were in meeting rooms. And he said, I can't say it's surprising, but it's impressive to see. And he talked a lot about it. And I just go back to Nick Saban, right? The Saban effect. The team still has that mentality that Saban hammered into them, that kind of ruthless type of demanding that he was. So that was really interesting. That's really about as far as we got when we really talked personnel. We didn't talk specific things. Now, I know he's obviously been asked quite a bit about the quarterback situation there. Jalen Milroe returns, and while he led Alabama, you know, all the way to the playoffs there, it does seem to be certainly some questions to his future. We didn't get into a lot of that, and I think it's still very up in the air since they're just winding down with spring practice. But it does seem to be a competition there. That's certainly a position that Kalen DeBoer's had success with, right? He's had some pretty good quarterbacks over the years, specifically the last couple at Washington.
Coach Saban's AFLAC buddy, Deion Sanders, Coach Prime, remains in the news. Three different things. One, his daughter entered the transfer portal as a basketball player. That's kind of funny. He loves the portal, lives in the portal. USA Today had a story citing that he didn't go visit any high school recruits at their actual high school since taking the Colorado job, or some nature like that. Came out and said he doesn't have to. He makes them come see him, and he's too famous. And if he went to one high school, it'd create such a sensation. And then other high school coaches would be mad if he doesn't go to their school. So he can't do that. And he's saying his system is come up and visit me in Boulder. Now, he has signed very few high school recruits, which leads people to think he's just here for the short term. Namely, while his sons and Travis Hunter are still in school and maybe leaves. I don't know. But, Pat, what do you make of Coach Prime? Just high school recruiting, not really his thing.
Definitely not. If you look at the 247 rankings, they go down to 83. Colorado's not in it. Got to be the only Power 5 school that is not listed in the top 83 in the 247 rankings for the class. That's for 2025, obviously, the class that's being, you know, heavily recruited now. I do have my suspicions that he is the ultimate little league dad who is now parlayed into being a major college dad and is coaching his kids. And yes, I think he basically considers Travis Hunter one of his kids. And when Travis Hunter is draft eligible after this next season and Shadur is going, we'll see then. Is he still interested in being a coach? or not. I don't know. I think that's very much TBD. And yeah, you can live in the portal, but you can't. Actually, I'm not sure you can live in the portal. You can rent in the portal, you know, get a good long-term timeshare in the portal, but you got to do some high school recruiting. And he just doesn't seem at all interested in that. And I just don't think you can engineer this for 3, 4, 5 years down the line without at least getting involved with the high school guys. And you do have to go where they live. So if I were Colorado, I would be a little bit concerned about what the commitment level is from Coach Prime.
Yeah, I have never heard of anything like this. Any other coach approaching recruiting this way. You know, you go to see players for more reasons than just to meet them face to face and talk to them and try to get them to come to your school. You go to see players at their home for home visits, and I've had a lot of coaches tell me this, because you want to see where they live and you want to meet their family and you want to see what their home life is like and where they come from and the city they come from or the town they come from. And I think it's important, not just to the player and the family, that a coach do that, but I think it's important for the coach to get to know the player in a way where you know their background and know what their living condition is. I think that's pretty important. And so this is certainly an unusual and unique way to approach recruiting. But then again, a lot of things that Deion Sanders does are unique and unconventional. So if this works for him, okay. I do know this. You know, you're in a situation when you hire, and I think we talked about this on the pod before Deion was hired. You know, when you hire Deion, you get a lot of other things. And you're just going to have to take those other things, because nobody is telling Deion Sanders what to do and where to go.
Now, I agree. I've heard coaches say, look, they want to get to the high school. Hey, talk to the guidance counselor. You bump into the chemistry teacher. Hey, you know, what do you think of Jimmy here? Oh yeah, he's great. Or, you know, you get a sense, different stuff like that. But yeah, Deion's going to do his own thing. Like that's a little bit like, hey, Galen DeBoer is going to call the game, totally different. Deal with it. He's the guy. It's a little like that. Prime's going to be like, yeah, what? I mean, he says, it's funny. I mean, his quotes on this were great, because he's like, there's a $200,000 recruiting budget for travel and he doesn't use it. He says, I'm a businessman, so I try to save our university money every darn chance I get. Appreciate that. I don't think
Rick George appreciates that. Yeah.
I don't think they're going under if you fly to Houston and hang out in high schools for a day.
I believe they're paying them $5 million, right?
Yeah. Save them money. Yeah. But he says, I'd have a different approach. He said he'd rather be home. He says, the kid coming here, going there, is just showcasing for me. That's just blowing money. It's blowing a bag. Don't make sense. I can't do things other coaches can do. You know why? I'm Coach Prime, and I didn't stutter when I said it.
Solid. There is one other part of this story. I don't know if it's in that story, but, you know, he does have, like, in a way, I guess it could be classified as, like, a disability, right? His foot. I don't know how much he can even move around. Yeah, it's pretty serious. So I wonder how that has impacted this decision, you know?
I have heard anecdotally, I don't know, because I did not I'm putting in any work and figuring out all the travel, but I wouldn't even care if Prime went anywhere, because I actually think it's kind of cool. Like, I don't come visit you, you come see me. But his assistant should be everywhere. You know, he is correct. Deion Sanders walks into a high school in Texas or Florida or whatever, and it's going to be mayhem, just how he wants it. He also isn't just, like, walking in. He's probably, like, riding a tricked-out golf cart. But, like, you know, these guys, they fly helicopters and land them behind the school. They do everything. They show up in limousines. They do everything to make a big sensation. They love it. Everybody loves it. So I don't know. He doesn't. He's going to be the portal king. He's going to do it his way. If I'm Colorado, am I concerned? Sure, but I think it's like we were so bad for so long. You know, what I'm not concerned about. We sold out the season again.
Right.
We're on TV a lot. I mean, applications for Colorado were up extraordinarily, including especially with African Americans students. I read. I don't know the like Boulder, Colorado. Not, you know, it has its own demographic. Like all of a sudden, it's a track. So Deion Sanders is doing what he's here to do, and saving on airline flights. So, you know, there you go.
Yeah. They probably spent a little money elsewhere for some few things for Deion that may actually make up that savings there. But
move that savings to NIL. How about that? There you go.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and the economic impact and the diversity impact on the school and the city cannot be overstated. I wrote a lot about that when I did the big Deion piece in December, and the numbers are astounding, frankly, in terms of applications and where they're coming from.
Yeah, so that is it. I don't know. But then he released, and this is the other part you get with Deion, because this goes viral. No one else can do these things. He gets a note from a teacher that some of his kids are just sort of sitting in class. They're there. Said present, but not, they're not participating. And so he chews out the team in this lecture about how bad they've been acting by not paying attention in class. And the professor wrote, "I've never felt so disrespected in my 10 years of teaching. Students do not follow even minimally, and it slows down my class so much. They make it clear they do not want to be there." Now that is, I mean, that's embarrassing for a program, right? Like, this is not what you would want out there. Not to Coach Prime. Right. Hey, let's videotape it. Share it with the world. He says, "You present, but you ain't really there. You on the field, but you ain't really doing nothing. You in a relationship, but you ain't got no love. You at the mall, but you ain't got no money. Got a lot of ability, but no damn talent because you don't think." He just rips them nonstop. "I'm a little frustrated. I'm a little angry right now." All this stuff. Absolutely goes off on them in a video that he releases. This would be the stuff that coaches would be like, if this gets out, oh my God.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
Hide it. Yeah. Talk to this professor. Get him out of that class. Oh my Lord. If anyone finds out our kids aren't paying attention in class and are disrespecting the teacher, Deion turns it into a movie.
Oh yeah. Everything. It's just like that. You know, I got my luggage, and it's Louis, the opening introduction to the team that a lot of coaches would have never wanted out. Again, go back to unconventional Deion. This is how he is. He's going to do things differently. And in a lot of ways it is like kind of a breath of fresh air. You know, you do wonder about the, as Pat kind of mentioned, the longevity, you know, especially when his, you know, kids are gone. But it's been fun to see something different. It has. Again, you just wonder if those different ways that he does things will last and will contribute to a successful long-term program.
The one thing, he is old school when it comes to that sort of thing. He really is. Like, go to class, pay attention, and if not, I will bust your ass, and I don't care who's watching or listening. You know, remember he blew up Cormani McClain. They had the number one defensive back recruit in the country last year, and he said, yeah, if Cormani actually, you know, learned his assignments and paid attention in film, he'd be playing more. I mean, just called him out. And I personally have no problem with that. If your players are embarrassing the program academically, well, that's one way to shine a light on it. And I'd say put them on blast that we're not going to do things that way here. And if we are, then guess what? The next thing is you might be gone. So I talked to a couple of faculty members when I was out there doing the big Deion story, and they loved his approach academically in terms of wanting the players to be, he was interested in what was happening on campus, at least they said, and he wanted his players interested and involved too.
All right, People's Court. We got a situation here. at the Chipotle in Southfield, Michigan. I've been to this Chipotle. I'm a little concerned. Mr. Aaron Brown, entered the Chipotle restaurant. This is from Police Chief Elvin Barrett, Southfield Police Chief Elvin Barrett, who lamented the poor decisions that will lead to the story. Poor decisions were made at the Chipotle. It's across the street from the police station. You'd think it'd be safe. Aaron Brown enters while standing at the register. Mr. Brown asked for extra guacamole on his food that he had just purchased. Guacamole, Chipotle's got good guacamole. He was given some extra guacamole, but it wasn't enough guacamole, apparently. Mr. Brown called the female Chipotle employee a derogatory name, which upset her understandably, police chief said. Our suspect, who previously paid for his food items, was upset. The employee was upset, and she left the counter, and people were trying to help her calm down after getting yelled at. Mr. Brown, with the counter now unattended, decided to proceeded to go around the counter and bag his own items, and then went so far as to grab a cup and go down to the guacamole and fill it up himself.
Self-serve.
A 21-year-old male employee tried to stop him, and they started fighting at the Chipotle. And Mr. Brown pulled out a gun and shot the employee in the leg.
What?
Wow. That escalated now, quickly.
Yeah. Now, I mean, let's just, people, we got to be better than this. You don't need to be shooting each other over guacamole. Need I lecture the public on this? I guess I do, because it's happening.
He committed lots of different violations here, didn't he? He harassed this poor woman.
Bad.
He illegally went, what?
Yeah, that's bad.
Yeah, yeah. Yep. He illegally went behind the counter and started, getting his own guacamole.
Debatable.
Theft. Yeah. Theft of guacamole. Theft.
And then he fought, maybe assaulted this man.
Bad.
And then he shot at him.
Yeah, ridiculous.
Also bad.
Don't shoot each other over guacamole or pretty much anything else.
Pretty much anything. Yeah, yeah.
If you're at a Chipotle and you feel the need to shoot somebody, take a deep breath and think about what we're doing here.
Don't bring your gun to guacamole or to Chipotle. That would be my starting point. But,
you wouldn't think you'd need a gun in the Chipotle. And you certainly don't need a gun to defend your extra guac. Pat, what's the sentence for this guy? Throw the book, gone? Just gone? You want extra guacamole? How's the food chow line?
Yeah, I would sentence him to the chow line at medium security, wherever the heck that is there in Michigan. I think so. Look, we've all probably had a little bit of frustration at your Chipotle or your Moe's or Qdoba or whatever when they don't give you quite as much of what you want. You know, that spoonful of rice is really not that big. So, like, can we possibly do another spoonful or half a spoonful or something? How about the meat? You know, we didn't get that much chicken. However, that should not move you to violence, nor should you go behind the counter, although I can understand maybe the temptation there. I'm afraid I have no real sympathy for our man for shooting somebody and harassing one of the workers. 20 years all at the food service line every day, listening to other prisoners complain about his serving techniques.
Yeah.
Let me say something. I absolutely love Chipotle. I'm a big double chicken burrito guy, brown rice, and plenty of guacamole. Now, this guy's sentence, I think, should be no more guacamole for life. None. Oh. He gets no guacamole at any restaurant, specifically Chipotle. He's probably not allowed in Chipotle. maybe ever again. Yeah. And also, you know, spend time in the clink for, you know, the gun charge.
Yeah. Apparently the employee will, you know, it hit in the leg. It was, you know, I love this, you know, not
thankfully.
He'll recover. Like, it's, you know, not going to die. Great. Still got shot in the leg. At least 20 years. A guac. We got to protect our Chipotle workers. Got to protect them. If you think the guac serving is small now, wait till it's a robot. You're going to see some stuff. We got to protect our Chipotle people. I throw the book at this guy. Completely, completely ridiculous. Cannot be melting down like that. That's it. All right. Pat left now. There's only one person on this pod. Pat had to go. Somebody worked the full shift.
We thank you, Dan. We thank you for your service, Dan.
Thank you. You're welcome. You're welcome. That's all we got. All right. That's our show. We will be back next week talking college football and whatever else happens. Continue to share us on social media, subscribe, and we will talk to you later.